You are listening to the Vital MX Post-Race Show, presented by Decal Works.
Nashville, Tennessee is arguably becoming the number one stop in 2024 Monster Energy Supercross. But despite the fact that so many love it, it has been so cruel to 450 and 250 riders the last 2 years. And we will discuss that and so much more on this episode of the Vital MX Post-Race Show. Yes, the 14th round of 2024 Monster Energy Supercross has been and gone, and the 450 SX title fight is raging on, more exciting than ever, perhaps. 250 SX East has maybe simmered down slightly, but 250 SX West has really taken a turn that will give us plenty to dive into and plenty of bench racing fodder for the days to come. I'm your host, Lewis Phillips, and it would be remiss of me to not thank Decal Works, Fox Racing, and Beta USA before we go any further with this episode of the podcast. Decal Works, of course, are a formidable entry into the graphics department. They supply the Red Bull KTM factory racing team. So when you saw Chase Sexton's bike fly through the air, that may have been a publicity stunt to get the Decal Works graphics in the eye line of those in the lower rows of the stadium, because the Decal Works graphics are that good that they deserve that type of attention. Thank you to Decal Works, and we will hear more from Fox Racing and Beta USA in the next hour. As normal, I'm joined by Michael Lindsay. Hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Just a brilliant race, as I said off the top. No doubt that this is becoming Supercross's number one stop, potentially. Like, the walking around the paddock throughout the day, just a great vibe, despite a bizarre setup. It was like a who's who of motocross, former riders, industry celebrities, everywhere you would look. It had a vibe of Anaheim 1. And I know we said it last year that Nashville should and could potentially become the final round here shortly.
It should, based on everything that keeps happening at it. At least if it was the last round, it wouldn't hurt so bad.
I just hope that Nashville will stay on the schedule, because this is the first time that Nashville has been run in consecutive seasons. So it's not so much of a lock that you can rely on it year after year. They are building a new stadium. The Nissan Stadium that we run in is quite nice. Certainly not one of the more run-down stadiums on the tour, but they are building an all-new stadium right next door in the area where the pits were last year, and that will have a roof. So 2027, I believe, that is set to open. Whether that will change Supercross's Nashville plans, I don't know, but just an interesting tidbit to consider as we move forward. Just bizarre, though, that Nashville seems to be somewhat cursed, and I have no reason why. I asked Adam Cincerello after the race if he had an opinion, because he is obviously much smarter than all of us, and he didn't really. He said that he felt as though the transitions were a little steep, but then all you will hear is that the transitions being steeper would be better. But I think he was more focusing on the pockets in the GLs. But then again, we had the same situation last year. I would argue that this year and last year we had a slight rain delay where it had rained overnight. And the dirt there is so, it gets so hard packed. So I feel as though as that dries up throughout the day, it just becomes really like clunky, crumbly, hard dirt that's a bit deceiving. You know what I mean? I have a very distinct image of dirt in my head as I use that description.
I thought it was funny because, I mean, having more of a hard base, I was just reading comments from social media from the forum, and Nashville takes on a very almost polarizing, in a sense, feedback from people. I think, yes, as an industry, from the riders, the industry of us that go, we quite enjoy the event. I see very mixed opinions from fans about the actual the actual quality of stadium concession, like a whole list of complaints. So like people that like it, people that don't. It is kind of a small floor space overall, excited for the new stadium, because I do think the venue and vibe is really good itself. And then the dirt, like there's people complaining about, you know, the dirt and stuff. It's like, okay, everybody's been complaining for weeks now that we've had all these soft rounds, all these super rutted rounds, and then we get back to hard pack and people are complaining, oh, the dirt's trash here. It's see how slick it is. Okay, what? We can't. It's dirt bikes. It's dirt. We race on it. It can't.
I was a little surprised that the track got so much heat from people online. Some people in the paddock. It was quirky, a little unique in its design, but I did not feel as though it was an especially bad track. Like, I would not list that as an outlier compared to the stereotypical track. It was very much half of the course in my mind, but obviously the common consensus across the board was that it wasn't a very good track. But we had cool elements. I wasn't against it.
I'd love to do like almost a survey at the end of the year, like a really built out one with every rider's what they actually think is a good track versus a bad track, and what they think of like switching up elements of a track, because I do wonder more and more. I mean, these guys have become such robots in a sense with rhythm lanes that are built to spec. I mean, you go back and look at races even through the mid 2000s, they used to have a lot more oddball elements on tracks. Every once in a while, we'd get like some big 110 foot triple, different, you know, dragons ons offs, other weird stuff, the double we had across the starting line this weekend. There used to be more oddball stuff. And I feel like now when we get outside the cookie cutter layouts, everybody gets a little there just ends up being comments about it. I'm just like, okay, or have we gotten to the point that everybody's not comfortable getting outside of the cookie cutter zone anymore? Do we need to weigh more often so it isn't such a shock to everyone? I'd love to put, like, I think even Fell and Dirtworks, like, it would be kind of interesting for them to, is like they said, put together quite a long deal and run it by everybody, every racer, and see what kind of feedback they get.
I want to start with Jet Lawrence, because although there were so many stories that emerged from Nashville, Chase Sexton, Ken Roczen, the Pro Circuit Kawasaki boys, the showdown as a whole, I feel as though Jet Lawrence's dominance and authority stamping does deserve apt kudos. I would argue, actually, in fact, I haven't quite settled on an opinion on this, but could that have been his best race of the season so far? I am certainly open to that discussion.
I agree. I think in terms of timing, you know, I think we talked about going into it, you kind of wondered her pack, like how his starts are going to be this weekend. You know, he's kind of up against the ropes between Webb, a re-emerging Tomac, Chase's pace coming around. You kind of wondered where his confidence was, kind of the post-race interview from the prior weekend was real mute and meh, and he just did exactly what he had to do, is just come out and stomp his authority. And to lap, what did he do, lap the seventh through seventh? I would label it his most impressive ride of the season because of the time, not only the quality of his riding. I think, you know, Webb, Tomac, a lot of them are on a high, and I mean, you look at even Tomac being fairly joyous about his second. He was happy with his riding, so you know he wasn't up there bummed that Jet beat him by that much, because he wasn't riding good. Those guys were all riding great. He put that much of a gap on him, and just considering everything coming into it, yeah, I would label it by far his most impressive of the season. Very clutch.
In hindsight, I will double down on that as well, because Eli and Webb at least started right with him, and we saw how that played out. And aside from maybe Detroit, from memory, Detroit is the only race similar to this where he started with some top guys right on him and just walked away. But even Detroit, maybe my memory is playing games with me, but I don't remember his lead stretching to this level. It was more management. The lead stayed around 4 seconds from memory, whereas this was just, I don't even feel as though it was intentional. I feel it was just a product of him riding that well. I don't feel like he got to the lead and went, watch this, I'm going to show you all just how good I am. I feel like he was just logging laps at a rate that was so much better than Tomac and Webb that was the result. And now this leads me to this question. Lawrence leads the championship by 5 points on paper, but it feels a lot bigger than that, doesn't it?
Yeah, just because he reproved, which something that should have been obvious, of course, based off his early season, some of the season performances and based on his outright pace, that, we're giving a lot of credit to Webb and deservingly so to bring it back in, capitalize, because Webb, I felt like, was not only just capitalizing on Jet's bad moments, he was truly inserting himself, riding some of the best we've ever seen him. Even you look at Webb's attitude the last couple weekends with how he's qualifying everything. So I think, not that we were downturning Jet, but I think there was a lot of credit to be given to Webb. But now Jet is just proven what we all already knew. And it's anything can happen the next three races, but when you look at the performance he put in, you're just like, yeah, if he clicks on all cylinders, what can anybody do about it? Again, I felt like maybe whether you want to say the confidence took a knock or just, out of his flow, out of his groove, out of his, the next steps weren't happening correctly. You could kind of see that pathway for Webb. But I feel like, if the door was cracked open and Webb was heading towards it, I feel like Jet just took that door and slammed it shut in front of Webb and everybody watching.
The biggest,
like, it's a small gap, like you said, but it feels like, damn. Yeah. Don't know what anybody does.
The biggest Jet narrative coming from Nashville is the fact that his start was back. And on a hard packed track as well. Regular listeners to this podcast will know this little beat that we've been on with Jet. The fact that he feels as though he is not as capable out of the gate on a hard-packed track. Well, this was hard-packed. Admittedly, he lent into the fact that it was tackier than you would think out of the gate, and that helped him out of the gate. But still, for him to get that start after a run of difficult starts, I believe that's concerning for everyone, because that is what you cannot have Jet Lawrence do. Ultimately, the way you beat him is you don't have him start up front, because we are yet to see him start up front and then just get worked. So once again, heading into Philadelphia, all eyes will be on Jet out of the gate, and that is where I go at the start of each main event. Let me ask you this, though. So Tomac did get held up by lappers on whatever lap Jet made the pass. I know the answer to this, but had that incident not happened, does Eli have more for Jet? Yes or no?
No, I think maybe it would have taken another lap or two, but I feel like Jet was in the position we've seen him when he's even done to Kenny, to Chase this year, to Webber. Like, I think he would have, even the way how quickly he made the move happen, he would have found somewhere else to do it, and I think he would have made it happen in such a fashion that Eli would have had a hard time responding. And I think that's one of Jet's biggest, I don't want to say advantage, it is an advantage, but whatever you want to call it, like a trait or a skill. I mean, he knows how to make a move happen and make it happen, but just immediately put some level of a gap into it and make it happen, like almost clicks overdrive, just gets that extra little bit out of himself for just enough time to, whether you want to say it, demean the other rider or put them in a position where they cannot respond. I think he would have still done it, within another lap or two. He would have found his place, made it happen in a way where I don't think Eli probably would have been able to respond. And again, against Eli, I think you could see again by his attitude on the podium, Eli was riding fantastic. And if this was remove Jet from the conversation, what was Eli down? 8 seconds at the end? I'd have to go back. Like, Eli himself would have lapped up to eighth or ninth. I mean, if this was a non-Jet conversation, we'd be sitting here talking about how dominant Eli's performance was, would we not?
Yeah, that would be a fun game to go back through the season and remove Jet from the class completely and just see who would have, like, how many more main event wins people would have, who would have the most podiums, because I believe it would change the outlook on each rider drastically.
Yeah, I have a note for that, and I think we should definitely do it. And it would be fun to just straight up remove him, move everybody up, but also talk about the races, you know, the perspective, who would have looked like they had a dominant performance somewhere. And this is one of those cases I look at it like, yeah, Jack killed it, but remove him from the conversation, we'd be sitting here talking about such a dominant ride from Eli. And it's crazy to say. And again, I think his attitude shows that it wasn't dominant because he wasn't riding well. If that was him winning, he'd be even more like, just a very, very different perspective. Very fun. The ifs and buts that are fun to think about.
In a similar breath, had Kenny not crashed and he was ahead of Jet when that happened, would Kenny have disposed of Eli and had more for Jet?
Ooh, I don't know, because that one's tough, because we applaud Kenny about his early race sprint pace, and I feel like that's been his biggest key character trait this year. Even more than ever, I feel like he's really, really upped his game there, but it tends to mellow off. I don't know if he would have, I don't know where to go with that one. I don't want to say he wouldn't have got Eli, but I can't say for certain he would have. I felt like he did his usual early race sprint, and then Eli was settling in and Kenny was settling in. I don't know where that pace would have gone from there. I really wish, I don't want to waffle, but I don't have a theory.
I said this to someone in Tomac's camp after the race, and this is a quirky Lewis opinion, but I do subscribe to it with every rider. In the last five races or whatever, Eli has either been amazing, the win in St. Louis, or outside of the top five. So in a way, and I said this at the start of the year about Jet's first five rounds, because he was either win or off the podium. In a way, I look at a second place as a nice relief, because it's like, okay, the very hot and very cold trend has ended, and it's nice to just have a respectable, solid result. Again, fully aware that that's a quirky Lewis opinion, because obviously you'd want to win. But it bucks the trend somewhat.
I think you're right. Again, I see, I feel like I'm being a horse, but look at the way he carried himself after the race. He didn't seem down about it. I think he knew he rode well. I think he knows that's a good, you know, back-to-back result for him. I think he knows he's putting together his weekends better. There's only so much, you know, the season's winding down. You know, especially with the speculation, it looks like he'll be racing next year. I think he just has to take these positive, you know, try to put together solid weekends, you know, find a positive outlook on and build from it. So I would have to agree that his camp and himself probably feels decently similar to what you're saying right there.
Well, maybe not such a quirky Lewis opinion after all. Exciting storyline to follow. We tracked this after St. Louis. Tomac led 10 more laps in Nashville. So now his 450 SX total of laps led is at, drumroll, 980. So 20 more needed across the final couple of rounds to hit the big 1,000. So that's very much realistic, I feel now. And to be honest, I would say that Tomac with certainty will win again this year. So I would probably put money on him hitting 1,000. And if he doesn't, it will be damn close. Like 995 territory.
Be close. And then what's his, what's the whole podium talk with him? He's very close. Is he very close to all-time podium
right now? I'm unaware. I didn't watch TV. That's a TV stat. I'm just Lewis stats.
Oh, don't start me about speaking of something on the TV that cracked me up.
It was Tomac's 120th podium, both classes combined. So there's that, 101 in 450s, 19 in 250s. Anyway, on to Webb, who, I don't know, like, okay, podium, trophy, brilliant. You got a trophy. That's great. And obviously from the outside looking in, that's great. But his worst ride since when? Like, because even Indy, he was off the podium, but I feel like he was riding really well. Daytona, he was off the podium, so maybe you'd say that. Like, I just feel as though there isn't much for Webb to smile about in the hours following Nashville, really. Perhaps too harsh? I don't know.
No, I agree, because I feel like this goes back to the Jet slamming the door conversation. If you're Webb, he has a lot of self-belief and he's never going to give up, but it would be hard to walk away from Nashville not sitting there going, what the hell am I supposed to freaking do going forward?
I felt as though he was losing so much time in the sand. Just there was no momentum entering the sand from him, and it was such a visible difference. Every time that he... It was almost... The best way I would describe it is there was some hesitation there as he entered the sand, whereas Eli and Jet were more... They had more conviction in what they were doing, which...
Which is crazy because you think of Webb and his confidence, because you could see the sand. I get it. It caught people out all day. But even first lap of the main, like, you could see your front group, your Kenny, Kenny in the sand, the first lap, holy shit. Him, Jet, Eli just kind of, like I said, went in with an authoritative matter and a certain amount of confidence and carried that. And that felt a little bit lost from Webb.
Sidebar on the sand, early on, everyone was going just outside. And then Tom Vial later on started going inside. In the first set of practices, I said to an industry heavyweight that I believe, and I would tell riders, to double into the sand from the inside, fade to the outside halfway through, and then rail the outside berm in the second part of the sand turn. And everyone in the press box laughed at me trying to believe that I knew better. But that second set of practices, the Lewis line came into play. Everyone started loving the Lewis line. So that was my little hang my hat moment in Nashville.
Journalist / writer agent / writing coach.
Yep.
Move over Marvin Musquin.
Move over everyone at that point, because that's pretty much the entire industry.
Okay. So you're moving to Florida. You're going to go down and start working with Chase a little more one-on-one.
Well, specifically sand turns.
Sand turns. So Florida, again, the home of your new people.
Let's
go out near Bithlow in the sand pit. You'll find Joey Savacci there.
Hilariously, I did say to Chase on Friday that I could give him sand advice because I've spent a lot of time at Lommel. And then that just came into play on Saturday out of nowhere. So there you go. The Lewis line. Just maybe my
I'll get a little sign for you that you can put in the ground. You can walk around on track walk and put it down somewhere if you'd like. Make sure it gets, you know, brought up on TV and such.
I would have just liked it. Yeah, I would have liked it to become like LaRocco's leap. But never mind.
Speaking of line, when I had to bring up funny from the TV, this is Tomac and Jet related. So during the main, Jet picked up on the line where you tripled the corner jump before the whoops from the inside.
Yep.
And no offense, I get the guys messed up, but they made a really big deal about TV. Oh, look at Jet just picking this up out of nowhere, just making it happen. And I'm laughing because I'm like, Tomac's been doing it for laps, and Jet picked it. Like, Jet saw Eli do it in front of him and start doing it, but Eli was actually doing it before Jet was. But they made a really big on, and I get, you know, the storyline, Jet's elevating the game. Look at him pulling this out of nowhere in the main. And I was like, Eli did it the lap that Kenny died in the whoops. So they replayed it multiple times and nobody picked up on that.
I will say in that I really struggle with confidence with that sort of stuff, because like even in the press box, you see someone jump a quad and that's the first time that you've seen someone do it.
Doesn't mean it's the first time it's been done.
I will never, ever, ever tweet or claim like X rider just did this for the first time, because I have so little confidence that obviously you can't see every rider, you don't know, and then even if you ask everyone around you, not everyone has seen every rider. So I feel like I never approach that, because I feel like the chances of you being wrong are quite high.
Yeah. Well, to give you an example, what was the... It was one of the really early Supercross seasons. This run was at A1 or A2 where Anderson was hitting, coming out of from what would be third base to home base, was hitting the triple and hitting the big rhythm. And I watched it all night. I really thought he was the first one to do it and the only one to do it up until the third main. And I said it to him afterwards in an interview that, you know, I saw that he did that and I was dead certain. And he looked right at me and goes, no, Kate Clayson was the first one to do it, and he did it right in front of me. That was my nice reminder, because usually, similar to you, I would rather say, oh, look, said rider is doing this rhythm, but I try to stay away from the first to do it because it bites you in the ass.
Speaking of Anderson, another fourth place, which is good and a step forward from where he's been mid-season, but at the end of the day, you look behind him, Barsha, Justin Cooper, Hunter Lawrence, that any worse than that would be quite shocking. So adequate from Anderson, but certainly not unbelievable. Going through the motions, I would argue, once again. And I feel as though this is just where we're at with Jason Anderson. But let's skip down before we do the rest of the 450 class to the bigger stories. Chase, first of all, per KTM. And also, I want to take a moment to applaud KTM for getting out in front of this, communicating what happened, and making sure that there were no question marks. I presume that was Stephanie Nutt who did that and like led that.
But I would be careful with the word no question marks, because I see a lot of questions. Don't get me wrong, but I wouldn't say the word no question marks.
No, but they've done all they can do.
Yes. They've done all they can do, short of showing the part, short of showing here's the broken part.
Like, no, but as far as PR, yeah. Even if it's a lie, yeah. Which I don't believe it is, but even if it is a lie, that's still PR 101. I'm not going to let you all speculate.
Get in front of something. Don't be reactionary, be forward.
We'll get to it, but Kawasaki's PR about McAdoo and Kitchen.
Oh, I don't even want to know.
I may as well, we'll speculate and throw PCs at the wall, because
we'll throw him in with the Max Volland if he still exists.
But yeah, and so I wanted to say that because that is a professional sports outlook. So well done, KTM. You earned the Lewis thumbs up of the podcast. Anyway, so a stone cracked Chase's throttle body and the throttle got stuck off of the single. Crazy crash. I honestly cannot believe that he's okay. He's come out and said he'll be in Philadelphia. So that's that. I don't believe there is even a question mark there. Obviously, stuff can change, and maybe on Wednesday he's not as recovered from being beaten up as one would have thought. But crazy crash. I just cannot believe he was okay. That was insane.
No, it was. I'm just, like I said, I'm still baffled a bit. Like, I'm baffled because the throttle body is so hard to reach, but definitely one of the more odd things I've seen in a while. And I think the difference, like, okay, the fact that we had two, and we'll get to Kenny's here in a second, but two very, very uniquely weird mechanical issues to two of the top sports with factory teams, with factory everybody. Very, very odd. Very, very odd night. In Chase's case, considering the size and scope of that double R stuff, I mean, we'll see if he comes out with anything with his shoulder layers or anything, but like, I'm pretty shocked he wasn't just like wrecked from that.
Most heartbreaking is, this is relevant to Kenny and Chase. I feel as though they both returned or hit their best level throughout the day, in Chase's case, and in early in the main event, in Kenny's case. So a real heartbreaker that momentum was just halted in a massive way. And even if, again, Chase should has said that he will be in Philadelphia, we don't know about Kenny. But even if they are both racing throughout the rest of the rounds, I would imagine it would be hard for them both to pick themselves back up and return at the exact level that they just were pre-incidents. Which actually leads me on to more Chase talk. I did feel as though that was the best he had ridden all year, not in the main event, but like the heat race, there was so much. It was Chase. It was the Chase that we all have come to know. He just looked great. His lap time was great. I actually made a note because I wanted to give a nod to Chase for his lap time in his heat, and then Eli for his lap time in his heat. Because both of those riders, and Jet also sent a good lap time in his heat, but Eli was faster, so hence why Eli is getting that credit. I feel like both of them really set the tone in their heat with raw pace and speed. But yeah, I felt like that was another step forward for Chase, and I was starting to froth at the prospect of Chase really inserting himself into the title fight. Obviously, it wasn't going in a good direction because his starts continue to really be bothersome. And in fact, I would argue that even with the crash now on Monday, Chase is probably more concerned about his starts, because the heat race start again was just terrible. The main event start was better, but still not where it needs to be. And I don't know what that is. I don't know how his starts can improve, because as we discussed after Seattle, he felt as though he had figured it out. He whole shot his heat and main, and then for whatever reason that hasn't carried over. So yeah.
I just feel bad. It's a tough one, I guess, for him right now. I'm just so curious, I guess, going forward, where he gets himself. This Supercross season is pretty much done and dusted. It's just, what can they learn the rest of the season? What can they do to basically pick themselves back up and get ready for a pro motocross at this point?
What I was going to say this as well, would being third in the final championship standings mean anything at all to Eli or Chase? Anything at all?
At the beginning of the season, I would say absolutely not for either of them. Considering how poor both of their seasons in a sense started, you could argue if you went to, remember like Chase, comment Chase, like how far off he really thought he was going to be at A1 and how much he actually supposedly hated the bike without telling any of us. I don't know if you approached him at that point and told him, hey, you can finish the season. You'll finish the season still top three with a win and lapside and hole shots. I mean, he might take it a little bit. It's like, okay, like that's better than nothing. I would argue maybe more like kind of seeing Eli's attitude really come around the last couple weekends with more success. I would say maybe as far off as Eli was there for a while, that third overall, it's not what he wants, but at least it's something to put some positivity into. So maybe for Eli, it would mean more than Chase, but for either of them, of course, it's not the goal. But based on how the season's been going, might be one of the best third place in championship. Actually might be like, oh, at least we salvaged something based on how that was going.
Yeah, I would presume it means zilch for Chase, just because he's been inside of the top three for a long time now. So like, it's not like third is really a step forward. In fact, has he even dropped outside of the top three at all year? He certainly, if he has, it's not been for long. Whereas Eli has been on the outside looking in. So for him to reach that position is kind of, it signals the fact that he has made progress and climbed up the ladder. So I feel like it would be something for Eli to hang his hat on. But yeah, I don't believe Chase would want to do that at all. And then on to Kenny. The way he got kicked and ejected gave me odd flashbacks to the Anaheim 2 2017 crash. Just the way his body dismounted the bike.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously he is going for MRI. Who knew that I struggle with that word? He's going for MRIs today. We don't know. His foot, ankle, and knee are extremely swollen. I would say that I would be surprised if that turns out to be nothing, but I guess he had x-rays of the track and that showed no damage. So fingers crossed that Kenny is okay. But yeah, you are the suspension expert, so you talk about your perspective.
Like I said, when initially went, I mean, it was obviously a shock, and for anybody who doesn't know, when a shock loses nitrogen pressure, oil, and or both, you lose all damping characteristic, and that is both compression and rebound. So there is nothing that stops the shock from compressing too far quickly, or nothing that really stops it from extending too quickly. So the term pogo stick is very accurate. Think of hopping up and down on a pogo stick. That's all that Ken Roczen's rear end of the bike became. Lands off the triple, it very clearly starts to fail at that moment. It makes the first three whoops with still some level of damping existing before it fully expels everything. And then from there on, Kenny was riding a pogo stick for the entire whoop section. At first, I would have thought that maybe, and I'm not saying this in the sense of it's show his fault or anybody. There's been a couple shocks I know over the last couple years. One that stands out to me was Malcolm Stewart at Moto Concepts had this happen. The top eyelet has failed out of some shocks. And not even, and I know teams are aware of this, so they've dialed back the hours that some of these shock bodies have used, because I think the guys are going stiffer. There's more pressure than ever on the shock itself. The eyelets have failed and basically pulled the top of the body apart, and that's initially what I thought this was. And I still haven't seen the shock apart, so don't know. We actually are posting a sequence on the website right now that you can see one of the C clips basically exiting the shock, which either could be from the nitrogen bladder side or from the seal head side, which would allow everything to expel itself instantaneously. I saw a comment from Kenny about the shock only being about 3 hours old, and I don't think they mean that from the sense of 3 hours on the service life of the shock, because they service them way more often than that on the race bike. I think they meant 3 hours on the body and the main components, because again, this is something that, especially at the factory level, teams have become more aware of the last couple of years, that they would rather, you know, rotate stuff out more. They would take a race shock, turn it into a practice shock, and get rid of practice bodies and things at a much more aggressive hour than they used to. So I feel bad because, you know, initially some people might look at the HEP team as not a full factory budget. Maybe they're extending parts too far. I don't think that's the case. The suspension nerds could get into the argument of pressure balance and some other stuff like that, but yeah, ultimately their staff is competent. It sucks. I don't know if they'll diagnose the parts more and release anything later, but yeah, that's at least what I have to say on it.
Kenny is great at communicating, so I would imagine that he will post on Instagram within the next 24 hours with an update on his condition. Rattling through 450s a little more, because we have a lot to discuss with 250s. Do you have anything to say on Barsha?
Barsha, from what I can tell, I'm going through our photos this morning. So they mentioned that he went to California this weekend and tested directly under the supervision of Roger and some of the more senior staff, which made me wonder, because from my understanding, Roger is the one that basically pulled the trigger and approved Sexton to use what, you know, we're calling the KYB conversion fork and a very modified production shock with KYB components in it. Barsha, I've been kind of waiting because I knew more of those components were built, but we haven't seen them introduced. I knew Barsha was one of the most aggressive of wanting something different. He has spent the last couple weekends not on works components, but on kit components that you can buy with an outside tuner's supervision help. This weekend he showed up on the fork and shock that Chase has been on. So it's a KYB conversion fork of sorts, although it looks like WP, they've built their own top cap part for it finally to kind of disguise it a little different or give it some different adjustment or functionality. But he is basically on the fork that Chase is on, and he's on a production shock that has been modified with KYB components. I'm stoked it finally happened, in the sense of I felt bad for other guys in that group that if they wanted what Chase had, that they didn't have it yet. And I still applaud the KTM group heavily, the US race team group specifically, for doing what's necessary to win. If they feel like this is the direction that needs to be done and they need to develop something new, I'm a win at all costs kind of person mentality. And I think racing in the sport should be that. So yeah, my hat's off to them.
You say you feel bad for the others, but it's my understanding that Barsha tested it a month ago and vetoed it because he didn't like it and he did not feel it was an improvement. So if he has gone that way now, I'd honestly be quite surprised at the U-turn. Yeah, but he definitely tested
everything
it.
Everything I can tell from the photos, he's definitely on it. Just as of for Nashville, he was.
Maybe it was a last resort. Like, he didn't like it a month ago, but then it was like, well, let's just try it and see what happens. But yeah, top five for Barsha, his first top five since his podium in San Diego. And wasn't that a long time ago? Justin Cooper continues to impress. Sixth place for him. Great job. And also similar appreciation for Hunter Lawrence, who got taken out by Jason Anderson on lap one and came all of the way back to seventh. As I told him after the race, there have been times this year where he has finished seventh straight up. So for him to get taken out and finish in that position, yeah, I think that is worth some applause. So good job to Hunter. And Benny Bloss, as I said last week, I felt as though 11th, 12th, 13th was no longer worth celebrating for Benny Bloss because that was his position. Well, eighth place for Benny and Beta is a massive accomplishment. And yeah, so good job to them, huh?
Isn't it crazy that, you know, when you look at the team hiring Benny and Colt coming into the season, it was kind of like, okay, Benny's going to be the steady Eddie. Colt will probably be their flash of performance at times, but Benny has been both of those for the teams. I think very well earned for Benny to, you know, take. For Colt, I feel like it was more taking a chance. Benny didn't have a lot of other options, but I feel like he's really grasped a hold of this situation. And I've been super impressed with his attitude and everything with it. I'm sure the team can't be more happy with what he's doing for them this year. Definitely earning that paycheck.
Yeah, I'm happy for all involved. And I would be really happy for you, the listener, to also try out Beta for yourself. Vital MX is proudly supported by Beta Motorcycles, which has been a family-owned company since 1905. Beta manufactures the finest enduro, trials, dual sport, and motocross motorcycles that are known for their top quality and rideability. Their newest model, the 450 RX, is the first four-stroke motocross model built by Beta. It was designed to offer a ride that is more forgiving, with the rare combination of premium performance and undeniable appeal. Check out betausa.com for more information. Talking to Malcolm Stewart on press day, he said that he blames most of his results on his starts. And, you know, when he said that, I was like, fair, because I do not feel as though I've seen you in the top seven at all this year, apart from a couple of heat races. And again, in a similar breath, I said, well, what do you put the Arlington heat race down to? And he said, the start. Like, it's that simple. And I was like, okay, I hadn't considered that point of view, mainly because I hadn't seen enough flash to believe that the start was really holding him back that much. To liken it to Chase in Nashville's heat race, Chase was quite clearly the best rider in the heat race. His start was evidently the reason he didn't win the heat. I haven't felt a similar line of thinking with Malcolm, but he was very adamant on that. So yeah, just a different perspective. Obviously, testing is ongoing, and that is also playing a part. But he does believe that that is the main culprit. It's interesting, huh?
Have you? Can we get a stats update by next week? Can you go back and look at every single start this season? See where it came up.
Yeah, out? I'm building that. I'm building that at a moment for every rider. I've done Eli, and I'm halfway through Chase now. So yeah, Chase basically starts first or starts outside of the top three, which is weird. Because he does start first, a la Seattle, a la Daytona. But apart from Seattle and Daytona recently, it's been not so good. Maybe even Lewis line could turn into the Lewis start improvement department. Cracking name. Final thoughts on 450s. AC was much better across the day. Almost won the heat race. Got out front in practice and fist bumped over the triple on lap one. The crowd loved it. But it was quite eye-opening talking to him after the race. And that interview is only available in podcast form at the moment, but we will most likely clip it for social because he did a lot of video demonstration of, like, it was really insightful about his issues and the way he has to change his body positioning, the way he tucks his elbows, the way he can't tuck his elbows. So yeah, I would encourage you to either go and listen to that in podcast form or keep an eye on social media platforms. But it was enlightening because although it was a much more positive day, he ran through all of the issues that he faced health-wise. And as I said to him, I feel like it's validation for you that even on a positive day, it was so difficult and disastrous that, like, okay, this is clearly it. Like, because I was expecting him to say much improved, felt a lot better. If, like, it felt like a massive improvement across the board, but yeah, it really wasn't, apart from some shining moments. Yeah, he dealt with a lot of issues, so yeah, nice for AC to have that moment though. Right, let's move on to 250s because there is a lot to get into there. Where to begin, I say? Let's start with this. So RJ said on the podium that he crashed twice in the break before Seattle and St. Louis. And then in my interview with him after the race, he said that I can't remember the exact wording, but he said that in Seattle, he shook someone's hand and some asshole shook his hand too hard. And he was like, oh, no, that's not good. So I'm putting all of this information together to presume that he had a hand injury. Yeah, which I also
Not shake your hand too hard if you would tell everybody you had a hand injury.
Well, best believe that as he said that in the interview, I thought to myself, was it me? Did I shake his hand in Seattle?
You're the asshole.
Like, you know how that works. You just hear that and you're like, did I shake his hand at any point?
But, like, I ruin RJ Seattle?
Yeah, so basically, yeah. Using all of the evidence, it would sound like he suffered a hand injury of sorts in the break before Seattle and St. Louis. Most crucially, his starts were much, much better in Nashville, but also the riding. That was RJ of Anaheim 1. That was RJ of Glendale. So, to be honest, the night the dreams are made of, because not only was it perfect as far as riding and result, I do not believe that anyone would have believed that he would leave with the red plate. Make up ground? Sure. But it was always going to be a tall order to leave with the red plate, which leads me to this question. RJ or Levi? Okay, Levi. We don't know. It sounds like Levi's ribs are okay, but obviously he's beaten up. So 2 points in it. It's basically winner takes all. RJ or Levi, who have you got?
Levi, especially with a week off to recover. I still think Levi's been the better rider round around. RJ, when you look at the points, like, Levi's is so induced by this issue where RJ's crashes have been more on himself and everything. I over two more races, I think history proves that Levi is the more likely candidate. It's still going to be close as hell.
I don't know, because I believe that one of Levi's greatest strengths has been his starts. And for whatever reason, his starts weren't great in Nashville. I guess his heat race start was good. He just got pushed wide. But still, Levi of recent weeks would have had such a good start that there would have been no opportunity for anyone to push him wide. Yeah. So, similar to Jet, I will be keeping a close eye on Levi out of the gate come Denver. Let's not forget that Denver was arguably RJ's greatest race ever last year. So there's that also. He's great there. And in fact, was it not Levi that RJ was battling for the win last year? I think it was in Denver.
Let me look.
I'm looking as well. I'm almost certain. Yeah, Levi Kitchen, second. Yeah, that was an insane race where essentially RJ worked Levi, because RJ caught him, made a mistake, caught him again. So that's some good juju for RJ.
Wow, your accent, that did not sound like good juju. It sounded like doo-doo.
Well, I said doo-doo. Is doo-doo not the word?
No, it's good juju.
Oh. Okay,
no wonder it sounds fucked up coming from you. Jesus Christ.
I said doo-doo. I thought it was doo-doo.
No, it's good juju. Like juju medicine. Like,
okay. Like juju Bobo.
Like Bobo.
Okay. Sorry. You learn something. I don't claim to be perfect. But yeah, I'm open-minded. Do I believe that all being well, as I realized that I left the door open as a trash truck goes by. Do I believe that all being well, Levi is the best 250 Supercross rider? Yes. But do I believe that RJ has now elevated himself to be competitive? Yes. Do you feel like that's an accurate statement?
Yes.
That's all you've got?
Yeah, it's accurate.
Okay, I was going to go and shut my door to get rid of the
we've said for a couple weeks now that Levi was pretty much the 100% lock on this. I'm going to stick with it. I still think he can rise to the occasion and perform. The thing that's, I mean, we'll even talk about when we get to these, the thing that just, at the beginning of the show, you said that, you know, the West had gotten interesting, but the East maybe not as much. I still think, regardless, with one standard round and a shootout for each, I'm so interested to see how this ends, because what's Hayden down? 13. And then Levi 2. Yeah, Levi RJ's is more of a heads up thing. I'm still curious, because, you know, I would think Philly Hayden's going to be on a do or die mission. If he wins, Vial gets second, third. Maybe he only claws back 3 to 5 points. So he comes in 8 down. But I just love the fact that if that happens, our East-West shootout might be more of like a head-to-head between RJ and Levi, while we're going to have this really weird storyline of Tom versus Hayden, like if people are getting in the middle of it. I've seen some people, like especially what happened with this one, people going, man, I wish East-West shootouts would go back to just being for fun at the end of the year. Probably for the writers, they'd probably really enjoy that, not having a shit show. But from a storyline and a fan perspective, I am salivating over the thought of what Salt Lake could potentially be. And my head literally probably almost breaking off my neck as I'm trying to watch everything that'll probably be going on once we get there.
Well, we obviously have 2 races before Salt Lake, so a lot could change.
One for each.
Yeah, that's true.
It's only one per coast.
A lot can change in that time. Oh, huh? Yeah. Nashville is proof that this can change in an instant. Let's move down to the Pro Circuit riders. So as I said, it sounds like Levi is okay. Beat up, obviously, but okay.
Some ribs, but okay.
Which is good, and as you said, it's East this weekend, so Levi has more time to recover. I would expect him to be 100% come Denver, unless there is an element that we don't know about.
I use the words 100% loosely. Have you ever broken ribs and raced with them?
Yeah, but apparently the ribs are fine.
Oh, I thought you posted they were broken.
Hold on. What, on Instagram?
Yeah, I thought his Instagram post said he took down some ribs.
I thought it said potentially. Hold on. Man, how quickly things can change. Feels like some broken ribs, but we will see. So I'm not sure. Okay, we don't know. But I heard that it turns out they're not broken.
Okay.
But yeah, I feel like he deserves props for coming through as well as he did. With that, you could tell as soon as he crossed the finish, he like clutched his stomach. So he must have been really struggling to breathe that entire time. And I feel as though he maximized the situation. It took him a long time to get up as well. Quickly, that crash, no blame either way. It's just a racing incident coming into the second turn. And the way that you avoid that is you get a better start, right?
I felt bad again. So you didn't watch TV. I'm not trying to bag on the TV group too much. But again, just calling something, it's difficult because the pundits are expected to stamp their opinion, but sometimes you call your opinion before you see something. When him and Cameron got together, it got labeled on TV. It was all Cameron's fault. What was Cameron doing? If you watch the replay front to rear, they're both guilty. They both move into each other. It's a racing incident. It is what it is. But it's, you know, because of Cameron's past, he instantly got thrown under the bus as being responsible for everything.
I mean, yeah, as I said, racing incident, that shit is going to happen mid-pack. Yep.
The only way to fix it, get a better start.
Moving on to another incident, the crash with McAdoo and Logan Lightsall in qualifying. Honestly, one word comes to mind, clumsy.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I do not, honestly, I would probably put more of a blame on Cameron. Because you're on a slow lap. You've got to be aware of all of these bikes that are flying around you. It's almost as if you or I went down to the floor and walked a lap of the track whilst qualifying was going on, we would have to be aware of all that's going on around us.
I've argued this with riders so much. I detest roll laps in qualifying. I get it, you need a brake lap, but at least just... It's a combination of not putting yourself in the situation that Cameron ended up in, potentially being landed on, hit, being in the way. Number two, more chances at a qualifying lap. Your big names, most of them rotate still. They still at least double, you know, roll out of the way, but there's some momentum carry. I'm hugely against like full-on roll laps because, like I said, you lose attempts. Overall attempts because of how long they take. But number two, what happened to Cameron? And I said, I hate to put it so bluntly, but I saw he's like, oh, you know, came together with somebody. And I watched him like, Logan was taking the qualifying line and you just rode into it, just kind of staring off into the abyss.
Yeah, you know, I would have to presume.
Kind of only blame himself.
I would have to presume that he had his eyes on someone else or something else. There's no way
he was focused on, who knows.
Yeah. There's no way that he was focused on that corner and that piece of track, because the rider who is doing a fast lap, no matter if they are the slowest rider in the class or the fastest rider in the class, they have priority if they are doing a fast lap. Because in that instance, you are the slower rider.
You know what's funny is in our sport, you see it so often in qualifying, and it's very different in other motorsports, and it would be so hard for us to police, but it always kind of brings me back to a certain level of unprofessionalism we have. If that's F1 or MotoGP, that's a fine. That's a fine. That's a couple knock on your own qualifying position. They put a lot of emphasis in being very professional and letting riders or drivers have their opportunity to qualify. And when you actually sit and watch qualifying, the amount of times that people screw up each other's qualifying lap per weekend per session is so high. And sometimes it's the biggest names being guilty of messing up each other or smaller name riders or anything. It would be so hard to police for us, but there are parts of me that wish AMA would do something about it, because you're not going to catch everything. But if you started getting aggressive with it with a few people and people knew, oh shit, if I just roll around, screw somebody up, I might get my own position knocked back or my fastest lap deleted. Ooh, I'm going to be very respectful and be careful and not screw up somebody else. It, like I said, you're never going to catch everybody because we have too much going on at the track at once compared to some of the other motorsports I'm talking about. We don't have enough camera feeds. But if you kind of stamped it on a few people, people would start to get the message. Because I don't feel like there's a lot of respect in our sport during qualifying.
No matter who's at blame, it doesn't detract from the point that this is just heartbreaking. Especially for it to go down like that, if you'll pardon the pun. To lose a championship potentially, most likely, on a slow lap of qualifying, which could have been so easily avoided. Yeah, that's heartbreaking.
Isn't it crazy when you look at the breadth of Cameron's season for injuries that he's basically, I hate to say the words, made it this far, but preseason injury, early season tibia, and then the qualifying crash, and then the one with Levi. Oh my, that's a lot. I mean, it fits into Cameron's narrative a little bit, and I'm not trying to say that's harsh thing. It's just, there's people who say like, oh, I'm unlucky, this or that, but there's times where eventually, you know, you end up in your situations for a reason. And I think his mentality is great. I think he's really, you know, tried to switch himself around this year, and maybe it'll take a little bit more work, but yeah.
I would say that it's quite clear that I believe he is also having MRIs today, but it's quite clear that he's got an issue. And to be honest, even if he was fully healthy with two rounds to go, I feel the chances of him overcoming a 16-point deficit and two riders, it's just too much of a long shot. So no matter the circumstance, I do believe that Cameron is out of this now. Fair?
No, very fair. And in that breath, we get to the Tom Hayden conversation. A lot different, again, than the Levi RJ conversation. So where do you sit at with that right now?
So I didn't see it because I wasn't watching TV. I mean, I guess they played this in the stadium, but I didn't hear it. Did Hayden say after the first qualifying session that you can see that the pressure is starting to get to Tom and Cameron?
I did not watch Race Day Live, so I did not.
I got told that Hayden said that after the first qualifying session, and then the second qualifying session, Tom went out and was second quicker? Yeah, more than a second quicker. So funny. That's funny. Like, I got a kick out of that. And honestly, I do not want to understate just how well Vial rode in Nashville. I feel like he was great. Zero issues with what he did, zero concerns about his status moving forward. As we've said, he's a two-time world champion. He knows how to play this game. Yeah.
That cannot be understated right now. Like, he knows, he's been under this pressure before. Nobody else, this case, he is alone there, knowing what it takes to get the job done. That cannot be understated.
But the flip side, he doesn't know how to deal with it being dangerous. And Deegan said in my post-race interview, to quote him exactly, "I ain't being nice." Actually, I can't even remember what he said. I ain't going to be nice. I think that was it. I ain't going to be nice at all. So
it shouldn't be. It's coming down to a very hard-earned title for either one of them.
Yes, but like maybe KTM should hire some security for Vial. Maybe we drop Chase down to the 250 class and just have Chase like riding backup at all times, like just protecting Vial. I don't know, but I feel like in a game of aggression and words, Deegan has the upper hand.
Yes, I guess. So it's worried for Vial. I'm kind of curious because Tom definitely seems like a cool operator, real just mellow. So, I mean, I feel like he'd be all, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know enough about how he handled his pressure in GPs. Is he the kind of guy that can be pressured, obviously, or is he the right person to deal with the way Hayden will handle this and his attitude and the way he will race him? Is Tom well set up to deal with that?
Yeah, Tom's great at that. The last MX2 world title that he won, he was tied with Gertz. Was it after the first moto or after heading into the last round? The last MX2 world title that Tom Vial won, he entered the final round 2 points behind Gertz. So the last round was essentially winner takes all, and Vial prospered. So Vial knows how to play this game, but that is irrelevant, because if Hayden Deegan's star Yamaha is going to come flying at Vial at 100 miles an hour in a 180 degree turn, Vial's kind of powerless at that point, which would be my concern. So, yeah, I believe that the podium interviews are probably going to become quite fun.
Yeah, potentially might try to play the mind game, which again, I don't think affect him. I think if you're Tom, I hate to say give up points, but next round, if you start wanting to just finish second, just finish behind him, stay away from it, don't worry about it, just put your points on the board. He's got enough of a gap that he like, unlike Levi and RJ are winner take all the next race, Tom is not in that situation.
No. And I would bet all of my money on Tom winning this title, because yeah, he's fine. He's going to be fine. I do not believe that the emotion or the pressure will get to him at all. But as I said, I just don't know where Deegan will take this to. Like, Deegan could take this out of Vial's control completely, because as I said, if Deegan pulls his star Yamaha at 100 miles an hour at Vial in a 180 degree turn.
That's some pretty heavy speculation. We have to wait and see.
But he said he's not going to be nice. I don't know what that means.
He's not going to be nice. He's going to ride him aggressively. Okay. You think "I'm not going to be nice" means he's just going to start ghost riding bikes into people?
Okay. Well, obviously I was being dramatic with that. But I like Vial. I like Vial for this championship.
I love the pairing. I love the fact that Hayden will probably try to continue to verbally say stuff and try to be aggressive, and he's got Tom again being cool, calm, and collected. I think the pairing's really interesting for the title. Again, my perfect world is I would love to see Levi beat RJ just by one position at the next race and then basically be tied or within a point of each other. And I would love to see Hayden win the next race and, you know, not really bring his in, but enough that I just, as a fan, I want Salt Lake to be chaos. Please.
Well, watch this space, I guess. Shimoda was very strong. Second place.
I said this early in the year. Joe would probably magically be his best at a shootout late in the year when there is no pressure on him whatsoever.
Well, this also plays into a previous discussion that we had.
Yeah.
That without his San Francisco DNF, Joe has gone 4-4-4, 3-3-2-2. So I don't know. Is that, again, has the San Francisco DNF warped us all? Okay, you'd like to see a win, but I don't know.
So let's give him eight. Let's say San Francisco, he got his fourth place. You can give him 18 points back. That puts him on 656. That would put him 10 points out of the championship right now behind RJ and 8 points behind Levi. And it would put him ahead of Jordan.
Well, I still wouldn't like, I wouldn't like him to win the championship in that case, but still he would be there.
He'd be there, but it's weird to say, like, he would just be there on consistency. Okay, my opinion, I'll just say it. Give him 18 points at San Francisco. It doesn't change my opinion on his season.
Okay.
Does it to you? Would have him sitting third in championship, only 10 points down, make you think this season has been what is expected of Joe?
No, because I want to see flash and I want to see a win.
Okay, if he wins one of the next two rounds and then we go to the story of give him his 18 points back and win and he only loses his title by 7 points or something in the end, then I'm like, okay, it's a little different. But that's, like you said, there hasn't been flash yet.
I'm sure that Jordan Smith is kicking himself a little bit because with Levi's issues, he could have potentially put himself back into this conversation after his Seattle mishap.
And then he died. Or not die. Sorry, he didn't die. He crashed.
Just I was going to say, did I miss something?
I say die, like just like, oh, he threw it away. But no, he went down.
I feel like, and actually I considered this Saturday morning, the Triumph hype has really died down and we're not really giving it any credit at all. So top five in a showdown, great work for a first year model. That should not be understated either. Talking about Hayden as a racer, apart from a title candidate, Nashville was very, very, very good because he had a terrible start in the main event. In fact, he was slowed up by the Kitchen McAdoo crash. And I cannot believe it. He came all of the way back to sixth. And then he also posted on Instagram that he had some sort of issue where his steering was getting jammed.
Yeah, what did he say? Like his radiator? Sure, some of his radiator was like hanging up on his clamps or something.
I ended up smashing my radiator in, and my steering would get stuck multiple times each lap.
Ooh, that probably means if he bowed the radiator forward, you have the radiator louvers love to do that. They pop forward, and then as you come back, your triple crown bolts hang up on them really bad, and like try to pop it out all the time.
Yeah, so I would honestly go as far as to say maybe the most impressed that I've been with Hayden all year. Because, yeah, when I saw him on lap one, I never would have thought that he would come back to where he did. So, tip of the hat to Hayden Deegan. Running down the list here, I need to talk about Gage Linville. The main event result does not tell the story, but he has been impressive this year. This was just the situation coming to a crescendo. I feel like he has opened a lot of eyes. If you track his progress, last year he was in two main events, and when he got in the main events he was a 10 to 15 rider. It just, for whatever reason, was hard for him to get in. This year that's not a problem at all. Heat races aren't even a concern. He's in every week. Again, he's been a 10 to maybe not 10, let's say 12 to 16 range rider. And then, in Nashville, he proved that he could run with just about anyone. I'm interested to see if this opens some eyes and maybe opens some doors.
Yeah. No, he's definitely, I feel bad because last year he had the support of the Firepower Honda team. So to have such a terrible rookie season with, a decent amount of help, definitely puts you on the back burner for, thoughts of getting support going forward. But to be doing the program basically on his own this year, to putting himself in there, to doing the work, definitely, I don't know, if this is enough. Maybe another big flash could be enough to get the attention of somebody small. Hopefully he goes somewhere for next year and starts building towards ending up somewhere solid in the future. TLD 250s. Pierce Brown lost his, fourth place streak?
It was a mix of fifth and fourth place finishes. Yeah.
11th and then Ryder D's 19th. Ouch.
But back to Gage Linville, I would actually quite like to do a story on the Dirt Bike Depot team because it's a unique setup, but I do feel as though it's giving these guys a very good base to perform from. I honestly do. So yeah, I may dive into that program here coming up shortly. Maybe I'll put myself in the depot.
Can we get our Ducati or our Triumph story first?
The Triumph story is dead.
Dead?
Yeah, I told you.
Oh, didn't know if I...
No, we spoke about it. The changes, remember?
Oh, yeah.
The Ducati one's almost done.
Okay.
It's, I don't know what to do with it. There's too many words. There's too much information. I don't know what to
do
with it.
There's no such thing. Come on.
No, but like, I'm trying to
give the people... Give the people something.
I'm trying to make it into a story rather than a Q&A, and there's so much content to put in a story that I'm like trying to like make it concise and to the point, and it's like I may just abandon the story and do it as
three-star
a Q&A.
Three-part story? Break it up into the subjects? I don't know.
No, we're not doing that. Yeah, anyway, I think I'm done. Are you done?
I had one weird one on here. Oh, it's just a comment. Nate Thrasher, again, not a part of the conversation. Don't know what, don't know where, don't know why, what's going on.
Well, hold on. Let me look, because I got Yamaha's PR last night. So,
let's see what gold's in there.
What did you say?
I said, let's see what gold is in there. That's a joke, because there's nothing ever good in PRs.
No, I'm sure they'll be... I feel like they're fine on the 250 side. Yeah, it's more just when, like... someone like Eli just won't talk to them, so they just have to put something out. Okay, I need you to say something here while I go on my emails.
I'm trying to figure out who was the most surprised. I need to look who the most surprising rider to not make the main for an East West shootout.
Well,
was.
I found a PR. Despite facing numerous challenges throughout the race, Thrasher showcased his resilience and skill. He started the day, blah, blah, blah. Then in the main event, there was an early race crash, and with nowhere to go, he went off track and found himself 20th. Undeterred, he climbed through the field to secure a respectable 13th place. So I guess he was in the McAdoo kitchen incident. Obviously, Deegan makes him look bad.
About to say, so was Hayden Deegan.
So Deegan makes him look bad, and to be honest, I would probably expect Nate to get a better result than that. But still, Nate said that he feels his riding was decent. He's just got to figure out his starts. If I'm Star Racing, and I don't know if he has a contract, I let Nate go.
He does not have a contract for next year. Just to reiterate, the only two existing riders on the team that have a contract for next year are Daxton Bennick and Hayden Deegan. Moseman signed in this year with a multi, is what they said, but I'm still questioning what performance clauses are in there.
Wait, hold on. Let me see if his PR says anything about Moseman.
Yeah, that was the other thing. Just he wasn't there, and we never brought that up. Just didn't exist. No big deal.
I don't know. Is Moseman still on the team? If he was on the team, you would think that Yamaha would say that, you know? Like, our rider wasn't up there.
Well, did they list all the others that weren't there?
Landed on in St. Louis, so maybe that. But then I felt, I believe he was cleared, wasn't he? Didn't we get an update that he was all good?
Thought so, but also, no offense, Mike, his the only thing he's ever posted on social about being on Star was a GoPro video from 5 weeks ago. We have no other updates. It's like Enzo Lopes does not exist.
Well, I feel that's more of a sensitive situation.
Yeah. Okay. Right now, while we're on the subject. Next year, Daxton, Hayden for sure, Moseman maybe, heavy rumors for Max, trying to think who else in there. Romano's more than likely out, I would say. Styles is out. Like I said, so does Thrasher keep his spot or not?
Well, I would want to talk about this mainly. So Bennett got third at the first round, which is, like, you know, great, brilliant, superb. Remove that. Has this been a success? Has this been underwhelming?
Let me look at his total finish. It's been kind of meh. What are we
He's
at?
He's gone 10, 10, 7, 10, 7, 20. Wow, okay. So it's really been heavy on 10s and 7s.
Oof. Yeah, just saying if you take... It sucks because he has that flash because, okay... Not to be mean, you look at his results, kind of consider, like, look at it compared to Hymus, and it's not all that different.
Yeah, but I would argue that Hymus
Chance has had more flashes consistently. We have one big flash from Dex, and then Ruff since then, and then Chance has had flash here, flash there, flash here, flash there.
Well, if you want to be objective, then you could argue that Bennett got third at the first round, but add in all of the riders who crashed in turn one, and that would have been another seventh place.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. I don't know, is that enough? I mean, is that like enough to get you excited and get you...
It's got another year. Good luck, kid.
Because it...
I'll be spying you. What?
It's more... It's maybe more similar to the star rookies who have failed than the star rookies who have succeeded, no?
Yeah, I guess...
I mean, it's middle ground, but...
Yeah, he's got outdoors to turn it around, but it's... I guess this is, you know... You look at behind him, the next kid who's on like the handshake, trying to figure out if he can get it deal. Power situation's not going good. I've heard that they've reached out potentially. Our teams, I don't think he's going to get a spot after this. Does this kind of look at like what we've talked about, their theory of the program is so good, the bike is so good, we can build champions. You remove Deegan from that conversation. Deegan is a within that near generational talent kind of conversation. Other than that, the bringing up Thrasher, some of these guys, it's not okay. Let me do a little bit of flashback here while we have a minute on it. Thrasher got brought in from TLD. Yes, he's won, but he hasn't gotten the job done.
Didn't he?
Yeah, he was TLD, and then they swapped him. And who the hell did they swap? Thank you. Yes. Levi Kitchen. They would never give a chance till he basically turned pro. Like his big show year was B limited at Loretta's, but he was probably the best guy of the weekend, won all six motos, but his competition was Daxton Bennett, who was 14 at the time and had come off a fresh collarbone before Loretta's. All stars kids were in the mod classes. He was in limited, so he got overlooked, did really good at Minios, beat a lot of star guys, got a tryout. I remember watching him ride the bike in SoCal, still got, kind of pushed off. Basically, they kind of waited to the last minute to get him. Justin Cooper's the same thing. Jay Coop killed it on Rock River Amateur Yamaha. He wasn't picked up by them until the last minute before turning pro. The kids they've tried to bring him more. I don't know if it's really working per se. It doesn't have that great of a success rate.
Yeah, it's an interesting one to follow. There could be a story there.
Like I said, go to the other one. So Romano's not going to work out. They're going to be gone with him. The LeBlanc did not work out. It's not exactly Masterpool didn't work out. That's the one they brought up. Picked him up coming off 85s. They are not, I mean, similar into the vein of, I'll say it, like KTM has that stat of being like, they've had a really hard time actually bringing talent through the ranks. Star does not have that high of a success rate of bringing talent through the ranks. Colt Nichols, same thing. Rock, like, all this stuff finally got there. Like, he won a title. Craig came from another team. Like, their titles are not built on... I think we look back at, like, yeah, they got Webb in his A year and kind of Martin the same way. They picked him up at the end of their amateurs. And Webb was a tragedy, in my opinion. Like, in the fact that nobody... And that's a big part of Webb's storyline and why I trust these guys. Like, nobody was willing to take Webb on, which is insanity for how good Webb was doing. So you go back to that, like they kind of built off that Martin Webb success, and I'd have to go back through a full team list, but it's like there hasn't been a consistent success rate of bringing up amateurs. It gets overshadowed, I think, by their total success that they can do it, but it's not really there yet.
I'll tell you who has had a lot of success with bringing riders through the ranks and attaching themselves to said rider for a long period, and that's Fox Racing. 2024, it's Fox Racing's 50th anniversary year, marking five decades of getting after it. Rides, innovations, victories, celebrate 50 years of looking forward with Fox. Hello, future. Thank you to Fox Racing, Beta, and of course Decal Works for all of their support of the Vital MX post-race show. Are we done?
Are we?
I believe we are. Unless you have anything that you really want to shout about.
I'm just digging into my whole star thing. Like, Ferrandis was brought over from Europe. Like,
okay, we're done with that.
They hired good talent, but yeah.
We're not going to sit here while you do a deep dive. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Vital MX post-race show. An incredible race in Nashville, and the mouth is frothing at what is to come in Philadelphia this weekend. And then it's on to Denver and, of course, Salt Lake City. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the podcast. We will see you next week for the Philadelphia review. See you then.